Well, good afternoon, everybody. Our guest today at Northwest Federal is a former outstanding umpire in the big leagues, John Rice, an old friend for many, many years, and we worked the baseball beat together for a long time. Do you miss the game, John?
Well, I did the first couple of years as far as umpiring was concerned, Bob. But now I'm very happy, and I still enjoy going to see the game played, right?
Who were some of the big names umpiring when you got started?
Well, when I started, they had Ed Hurley, Bill McGowan, Bill Summers, Bill McKinley, who just passed away in the last week or 10 days. And, of course, in the National League, they had Al Barlick and fellas like that, Larry Goetz, who was a great umpire. There was a lot of good umpires in those days.
I think there were, too. You know, the style of umpiring back of the plate in the American and National League was different for a while. That's been corrected, hasn't it?
Well, it's under an ongoing repair job now, Bob. They've agreed, the American League, that all of their umpires that come up from 1980 on will all wear the inside protector and that they will go the National League style. The fellas who are there now that use the outside protector, it's still their privilege to do that.
How many leagues did you work in, starting with the minors?
Bob, I worked in five minor leagues, starting in Illinois State, a Mid-Atlantic League in Pennsylvania, the California League, the Western League, and the American Association. It was so long ago, Bob, I'd almost forgotten the names.
Did they ever run you out of town?
Oh, yeah. Two or three times. No one can get away without getting run out of at least one or two towns, especially in southern Illinois. They throw rocks and coal at you, and Pennsylvania coal, and California oranges. And in Venezuela, I worked two winters, Bob, and they throw their shoes at you down there, donuts. They really get excited.
Well, it's a great game, and actually the game hasn't changed, has it?
No, it hasn't changed. It's just moved around the country a whole lot, Bob. And we have more teams and more players. That's one of the things. And more areas that want big league baseball are just going to have to wait and try to get it on cable TV, I guess.
Now, you were calling balls and strikes behind some of the greatest hitters of all time.
Well, Bob, I thought there were some great hitters in the National League, of course, that I only saw in the movies or on television or on during spring training games. So actually I didn't get to work behind too many of those, such as Willie Mays and Stan Musial and fellas like that. But I called balls and strikes on Ted Williams, on Joe was gone, Bob. He was gone for about 5 or 6 years before I got into the big leagues in 55. But you can go down the Yankees, who were all great hitters, the Boston Red Sox, and not including Pearsall in that group, but they had Jackie Jensen. They had Pete Reynolds, who everybody forgets he led the league in hitting, playing with them. And, of course, the Yankees had Yogi Berra, Mantle, Maris. You name them, they had them. Hank Bauer, Bob Cerf.
Did Ted Williams ever squawk on balls and strikes?
I don't ever really remember Bob Ted complaining too much. He might turn around once in a while and say something to you, and no matter who it was, whether it was a young umpire or an old umpire, he'd say, "Hey, kid, was that a good pitch?" And he'd say, "Well, just barely caught it." "Okay, that's all I wanted to know." And he's hoping the guy would throw the same pitch back to him, and if he did, goodbye, or win a line drive. But I just saw him moan and groan one time just a little bit, and then as he started to complain, he changed his mind, threw the bat into the air and walked away.
Were there any of those players that really were constant squawkers about balls and strikes?
Well, the one that stands out in my mind was a National Leaguer who came over to the American League, and he was a real character, Johnny Temple.
I remember.
Another fellow that wasn't in Temple's class, because Temple was in a class of his own, was a fellow by the name of Gentile, a first baseman. But otherwise, most all the fellas were pretty fair. It's still going on the same way today, and there aren't too many real bad complainers.
Has the strike zone changed since you left the game?
Bob, the strike zone changes all the time. it's up to the executive committee. They state what the strike zone is. Sometimes it's the top of the shoulders to the bottom of the knees. Then they change it from the armpits to the top of the knees. And now that they've raised the mounds and monkeyed around, they've got it right down now in the book, and it's been that way for quite a few years, from the armpits to the top of the knees. The only changes is in the different characters and different umpires that they have in both leagues. And, of course, as you know from being in American League, the style of the umpiring. American League is over the top with a balloon, or what they used to call a balloon. It's now foam rubber. And the National League is in the slot in between the batter and the catcher. But basically, the book says that both legs are the same.
When you were umpiring back at the plate, were you concerned about a pitcher putting saliva on the ball?
We were more concerned, Bob, and really doing the best job we could calling balls and strikes. That's what we get paid to do and run the game. Actually, I think that if they'd changed the name from spitball to something else, they'd probably legalize it. I know Mr. Harridge, he used to flinch every time somebody would mention spitball. He said, that's a nasty thing to say, and we shouldn't have our children growing up using the word spitball. So now that the vocabulary's changed so much these days, maybe it'll come back.
Was it easy to distinguish a pitch if he had saliva on it?
No, Bob, because there's so many other trick pitches. They throw the forkball, and they throw the one knuckle curve, and basically it's a rotation. But again, I say, very few umpires could pick up a spitball. How many fellas have been accused in 20-some years of, or 30 years now, I imagine, of throwing a spitball? Someone was called on opening day about 5 years ago, and I haven't heard of anyone since in the papers.
That's right.
So maybe they should legalize it. Let them throw what they want to.
Well, they have the curve, the fastball, the slider, which is actually a nickel curve, isn't it?
Yes, that's what they call it, but that's what they used to call it, I should say. Now it's a very, very fine pitch because it looks so much like the fastball, yet it'll tail away, and then in other times it looks like it's going to be a curve, and it just hangs right there, and it fools the batters.
In the early days, they used to talk about the drop.
Well, nobody throws what they used to call a drop anymore, Bob, or the out drop. I was just speaking a little while ago with a gentleman, and he asked me, who is a great curveball pitcher? And I said two of the best curveball pitchers that I ever saw in the American or the National League were Camilo Pascual and I can't think of the guy from pitch for the New York Giants, Juan Marichal. Now, those fellas learned from old-timers down in Cuba. They threw the overhand drop, and they also threw what we used to call the out drop. They had good control of it, and as you know, they both won a lot of games. Feller come up with a big curve his last couple of years. I only saw him my first year in American League in 55, and another fellow who had a tremendous curve was Herb Score, but we just didn't see enough of him in the major leagues. I saw him in the minor leagues for 2 years, and he was basically untouchable. He was a great pitcher.
He really was. It was really tragic. He was hit with that line drive that ended his career.
Yes, I know that very well.
You working that game?
I was working the plate that night in Cleveland when Al Smith hit the ball. I was one of the first ones out, and it really ruined his career. It was really an unfortunate thing.
As you look back in your career and having an occasional argument with different ball players, any humorous thing ever happened?
Well, I suppose there were, Bob, but it didn't seem too humorous at the time. The last one I remember was I was working second base in California, and the plate umpire called a man safe at home plate, and it was obvious to almost everyone in the ballpark, except him, that the man had gone out of line. So after about a five-minute conversation with the managers, he finally came and asked me, because I was a crew chief, for a little help on him, and I told him, I'll take care of it, and I raised my arm and called the man out. With that, the California manager went away, and Eddie Casco come running out, and he put on a little act. He was a nice fella, but he was a little funny at times. And he said, you're going to kill me if you change that. And I said, you're already dead because I've changed it. He fell back in a dead faint, and I stepped over him, and Eddie Papowski was the coach. He said, you're not going to do that to him, are you? And I said, no, I'm just leaving. I want to call an ambulance. But that was an old line from another umpire. But there are a lot of funny things that happen in baseball that aren't funny at the time, but after you think about it a little while, it is. Another incident happened when, back to Johnny Temple, when he was released by the Baltimore club. He was with Baltimore. He came into the dugout dressed in his civvies, and he didn't know that he was going to go to Cleveland. And he hollered out, "So long, you friendly fellows. I'll never see you again." 2 days later, we saw him in Cleveland. He got run the second day that he played up there. But you never know about those lessons.
Were you quick-tempered, or did you have patience before you throw a guy out?
Well, I always hoped that I wasn't too quick-tempered. I was quick-tempered, but I was always able to hold it a little. And I guess the back of my neck used to get redder than it is, or my face used to get red. And most of them knew just about how far that they could go, and they'd leave me alone. And I'd leave them alone, of course.
Our guest today, we're delighted to have him, was a former outstanding umpire in the big leagues, John Rice. We'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Our guest today is John Rice, was a former outstanding umpire in the big leagues. You know, John, I worked the Cub games, and I worked the Sox games, and I worked in the National League, and I had the pleasure of watching one of the great umpires of all time, Bill Clem, who is regarded as, in your profession, as one of the great ones, right?
You're absolutely right. Yes. Unfortunately, I didn't have the privilege of ever seeing him umpire, because actually, until I got into umpiring, I wasn't very interested in umpires.
Oh.
I went to an umpire school I was getting too old to play baseball, and I didn't have any ability. And I thought I'd do some umpiring around the Chicago area. I was working as a salesman at the time. And they offered me a job in the minor leagues, and things were so bad, similar to what they are now, that I took the job umpiring. It was in 1948. And I snuck along, worked my way up through various leagues, and every time I'd get disappointed, I didn't think I was making a move, I'd be lucky enough that year to move up to another classification. And fortunately, I was picked to go to the American League when Bill McGowan passed away in 1954.
He was a wonderful umpire.
He was a good umpire. He was a character all of his own, one of the last of the character umpires. I think the last one that is really a character is Jock O'Conlon, of course, who made the Hall of Fame. But all of the umpires now are basically professional umpires.
I can remember at Wrigley Field when there was a big argument and Bill Clem was back of the plate. And the fellow who he had called a strike on, or whatever it happened to be, that started the argument, he would take his bat and say, "Hey, let me take that bat a minute." And he'd draw a line maybe 4 or 5 feet between them, and he'd say, "If you step over that," and then he'd walk back further. He'd say, "If you step over that line, just keep right on going to the clubhouse."
I believe that. I heard that story myself.
Yeah. Well, I saw him do it.
I believe you, Bob.
Yeah.
Things have changed now. The attitude of ball players towards umpires have changed. The umpiring profession, for some reason, doesn't get the respect that I think it should have. And if you drew a line down there in the dirt today, I'm sure that the ball player you drew the line against would jump right over it and scratch it out and kick dust all over you, because they don't seem to discipline the ball players, the league offices, like they used to.
Well, umpiring, as you say, is a great profession. I mean, the umpires, I always used to praise them every chance I got, because, well, you've never seen an umpire involved in a scandal. They always did a good job.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, Bob, because it's true, and I hope that it continues for the next longevity of baseball, which I don't know how long it's going to go. I hope it is going 50 or 60 years from now. We'll both be long gone, but I hope for the kids that we have baseball.
John, is it hard for a young man today to get to the top in umpiring?
No, sir. It should be easy for a man to get to the top. It's continuous expansion. They need umpires right now that they don't have any extra good umpires in any of the minor leagues. If they had some in the minor leagues, I'm sure that they'd send some down that they have now and make a little trade as soon as possible. But they've got the best umpires that they can possibly get on the staffs right now. If a young fellow wants to go out and get into baseball and start off at a very low salary, probably $500 a month, and that includes his living expenses, he can go. If a fellow has any ability, he should be able to get into the minor leagues in 4 or 5 years.
Well, I remember when you were umpiring, there were many, many minor leagues, but most of those have disappeared today.
Oh, sure, Bob. They've disappeared because there's such a tremendous acceleration, and most of those minor league clubs are gone to become big league teams, and a lot of those fellas that should be playing in those minor league clubs are now playing in the major leagues. When you look at expansion, there's probably 200 ball players who are AAA or AA ball players playing because they have to fill up the staffs of the rosters, I should say, of the big league teams.
Well, it's true. You watch television, you see a guy come up to the plate, they flash a sign, he's batting 206, you know, and he's been around the big leagues for a couple of years. 25 years ago, that kind of a player would have to pay to get in.
Well, Bob, you're absolutely right. And 25 years ago, the fellow who was hitting 309 was only making $7,500 a year. That guy that hits 209 now is making a minimum of $30,000 a year. The money's has risen because of inflation, and I don't know what's happened to the batting averages, why the deflation, but I guess it's just that they're not good enough to hit in the big leagues. That's all, Bob.
Well, you work back at Ted Williams, who's really one of my favorite guys. We had him out here last year on a Saturday, and I used to love to watch that guy go up to the plate.
Well, he was a great hitter. A lot of fellas have tried to copy his mannerisms, but he was one of a kind. You know, fellas like that are born, not made. These fellas now, they try to teach him. They have good coachings. All the teams have good coachings. But the attitude of the ball player today is completely different from what it used to be. You used to be able to teach a ball player something, I believe, that would help him. Now they're all big leaguers. As soon as they get up there, I think they ignore the coaches, and they revert and play to the style that they've been brought up since they were a kid in little leagues. Instead of getting in the front of the ball, even like some people tell them to do, they want to play the ball on the side, catch it one-handed, and throw it on the run. And that's what happens to a lot of infielders that shouldn't have as many errors. They don't listen to the coaches.
Do you know Casey Stengel well?
Yes, sir. I knew Casey Stengel very well. He was a good manager. They all call him a push-button manager. But he had great camaraderie with all of his players. They all liked him. Nobody disliked him. Nobody said anything behind his back about him. And if they had anything to say about the coaches, they went right to Casey, and Casey would straighten things out.
Did you ever run him out?
I never saw Casey Stengel get run out of a game that I ever umpired in, either on the bases or behind the plate. He'd come out. I called a play one day that Rizzuto was involved in. Bobby Richardson flipped the ball to him to pull him off the base about 3 foot, and he come limping out there, galloping out, and he said, "What happened, Rice?" And I said, "Phil didn't touch the base." He said, "Young man, I want to tell you something. Phil Rizzuto always touches a base." Turned around and walked away. No use saying anything. He had the last word. Another time he came out and he said, "Well, I think you missed that one. You're a better umpire than that." And he walked away. So what could you say about a man like that? He never put on much of an act unless he really had a legitimate complaint.
Well, he was a wonderful man. I really enjoyed knowing him.
It was a pleasure to be with him. I'm sure that there won't be anybody around like him for many, many years, if ever.
Yeah, he just probably won in a mold. But he was a great, great credit to baseball. I wish he was still here. I really miss him. Well, your years in baseball were good to you?
Oh, yes, sir. My years in baseball were good to me. Wasn't too bad. The money was pretty good. The traveling was irritable. Probably irritated my family, but it enabled me to meet a lot of nice people, such as yourself, and it enabled me to meet people on the outside during my months off, and I was able to come up with a decent job so that when they retired me in 19, 73, I was able to step right into a job that I'd been working for in the winters, and I'm still at it.
You're working for a nice man.
I certainly am. I'm working for Sid Olson, the recorder of deeds, and I'm now the chief deputy recorder of Cook County.
Did you ever call a play and wish you hadn't, wish you could have changed it?
Well, several, Bob. My most memorable was right here in Chicago. And Nellie Fox was a runner, and it was a tough situation against Baltimore. And they all had a little huddle. And Brooks Robinson said to me, "Ricey, give me a quick call, will you?" He said, "We're trying to trick play here, and we're going to try to, I'm going to come on back to third base. We're going to try to force Foxy." So I said, "Okay, no sweat." So bingo, here they put on the play. And Foxy is just there as the ball gets there. And Foxy hits Robinson's foot, which was on the base, and the ball at the same time. And I called Mr. Fox out. If I'd have been smart, I'd have called him safe because he was basically tagging the bag because he was blocked off it. And I called him out. And, of course, I stuck with my guns. Mr. Lopez and I had quite an argument. And they put up an sign. And it just happened to be about 250 friends of mine from the southwest side out there last night. And they put up a big sign saying, 25 bags of Rice Krispies to anyone who'll pick them up. That was one of my most embarrassing situations.
Well, John, you were a real credit to baseball and a really fine umpire. We've enjoyed having you as a guest today, and lots of good fortune to you.
Thank you very much, Bob. It's a pleasure.
Our guest today, John Rice, was an outstanding umpire for many, many years in the American League, and we've enjoyed having him as a guest. Have a happy day, and now this is Bob Elson saying goodbye until next Saturday at our usual time.